Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It is the Thursday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well on what started out as a rainy, it's just become more overcast and breezy, maybe windy even, as we've moved on here this afternoon. But it's been a wintry-looking but not really chilly day. So hope everybody doing well as we head toward the weekend here on The Drive. Love for you to join in. It is Bill and Dan. Dan at the controls today.
Yeah, I've seized control of the apparatus, and I thought Drew's been working hard and been taping a lot on campus, and I thought if he wants to take today off, I was already prepping myself to sit in the chair. So thought I'd do give Drew a solid and step in as producer today.
Yeah, okay. So we're another person shy as well today, as Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer got some things going on.
Ferguson's got some family business going on. He's going to try to join us in hour number two. Open to a phone call we got
David Paschal,
don't we?
We got David Paschal, and then we have a Tiger Takes.
Let me see if Ferg can do 4:30.
That would be great.
Let me see if Ferg can do that.
Because we got Tiger Takes, which once again, as we'd been told you last week, Tiger Takes is going to be moving to Wednesdays because we have a pretty full Thursdays normally, full Thursday normally with Justin Ferguson usually with us in the studio for the entirety of the show, and the David Paschal from Chattanooga joining us at 5. So we're moving Tiger Takes back to Wednesdays, but yesterday just connections couldn't quite be made yesterday. So we have a Tiger Takes ready that we're going to run today, back where we had been running it on Thursdays, but the plan is to start doing Tiger Takes on Wednesdays at 5:30, because Wednesdays, of course, we have Jason Caldwell with us in hour number one, and then it's just we're open for calls. We don't have any scheduled guests in the second hour of the Wednesday show, so that's where we will move it starting next week, but today we've got Tiger Take, sponsored by 12K Salon, at 5:30. David Paschal, a little after 5.
I've reached out to Justin. We will see if he's available.
Yeah, that'd be good.
In hour number one, he might be able to pop in tomorrow if he can't squeeze in a segment for him. Because, like you said, it's a busy hour two with our buddy David Paschal. Nobody covers the SEC like Paschal, and he's got some interesting games.
A lot of the games from last week weren't what people expected. Auburn wasn't the only game that caught folks by surprise last week.
Who would you say in the conference is panicking right now? Where would you say that? And maybe Auburn, you could argue, after the way the offense looked.
I'd say Florida fans really want to see what's going on. The Florida-Texas A&M game, that game in Gainesville, is very interesting because if Florida, can bounce back and knock off Texas A&M, then, it's Mike Elko's first year, so I'm not talking about anything as far as coaches are concerned, but it looks like it could be a long season for A&M if they don't beat the Gators.
They thought they were bringing back a lot at A&M, though, and I think to lose their first two opportunities against Power 5 opponents, Notre Dame and Florida, would be pretty disappointing, especially, they also thought they were, they had a quarterback that they felt pretty good about. That had been QB1 all offseason. A lot of the same stuff we were saying about Peyton Thorne.
Absolutely.
Here at Auburn, people were saying about Connor Wegman, even though the system was different at Texas A&M. Would Kentucky qualify as a panic?
I would think Kentucky would. And I don't know. After what happened to them last week, it's hard to imagine, that they're going to be able to beat Georgia. I mean, that one's really hard to imagine. But they need to not be beaten down by Georgia tomorrow. Look, they're 24-point underdogs tomorrow against a team that has beaten them 14 straight years. So, no, nobody's – I don't even think Kentucky fans were overly optimistic that they were going to win, but they thought they could be much more competitive, thought this would be a chance. They played Georgia much tougher in Lexington than they have, but they lose their first two home conference games, then, yeah, you just wonder what's going to happen to Kentucky for the rest of this year.
The panic at Kentucky wouldn't be about what's going to happen against Georgia. The panic would be about looking like that against South Carolina at home when you had a Sun Belt opponent week one that you kept it pretty vanilla. You know, that's the other thing, and you could say this about Auburn too, Bill, where when it's your first big test of the season, your first Power 5 opponent or your first major conference opponent, the thought that you come out inept is especially troubling because in theory you had extra time in the offseason to prepare for that exact game. Right, not that you want to overlook an Alabama A&M at Auburn, or in the case of Kentucky, they had Southern Miss at home week one.
Kentucky's, I do wonder that Kentucky might have been thinking, after what South Carolina did, their first game nearly losing to Old Dominion, that Kentucky folks may have been looking ahead to the Georgia game, sort of like Auburn fans have been looking ahead to Oklahoma.
Potentially, but it was just the ineptitude offensively for Kentucky. I mean, I was giving you updates on the stats while we were watching Auburn-Cal, and
Rock,
I would say
Rock,
you know,
Vandegrift has gotten off to a rough start.
Well, I mean, and he didn't get that many attempts in. I mean, into the fourth quarter, he was 3 of 9. And that's a tough way, especially considering they trailed for much of that game. Mm-hmm. That's a tough way. I mean, I know they are. I know they're committed to the run. They always have been under Mark Stoops. They don't think they're going to beat people throwing it all over the field, and trying to have better skill position players at the quarterback and receiver positions at Kentucky. That's rarely the way it's worked for them under Stoops. But when you start finding yourself down double digits, maybe you veer from that a little bit.
Throw the ball more than 10 times. Yeah, Vandegrift finishes the game with 10 pass attempts, 3 of 10 for 30 yards.
I don't know. I mean,
in a 31-7 loss. Was it 6? Was it 6
it
or
was,
7?
It was, I mean, it was ugly. I think it was 31-6. I mean, now they got to try to put that behind them and go to Georgia, which is or host host
they
Georgia.
They host Georgia.
They host Georgia, but they got to move on to the Georgia game. Mm-hmm. And it's not who you want to see on the schedule the week after a performance like that.
No, and in 2 weeks,
I don't know when you want to see Georgia on the schedule, but certainly not after you play like that against South Carolina.
But in 2 weeks they go to Ole Miss, and then they get an open date before they've got Vandy. Vandy's got to be going, hey, we've got a shot to go in there and beat them. Then they go to Florida. They've got Auburn at home. They go to Knoxville. They go to Texas.
They just let their most winnable SEC game, absolutely, or one of their two most winnable.
One of their two most winnable. On paper, preseason, you would have said Vandy and South Carolina are the two easiest games on their schedule, conference-wise.
Yeah. And now you're looking at
– you've lost the first one.
And not just losing it. I mean, being
– oh, you were dominated in the first one.
Soundly beaten in one of those two games. That does not bode well for the rest of the schedule and the rest of the season for Mark Stoops. So, yeah, I think there are a couple fan bases where you could say they're in I would say
– deeply concerned.
Would a South Carolina upset would probably move LSU into that camp, I think, after – I mean, you can
– because all LSU would have accomplished, if they lose this one, is beating Nicholls State. I mean
they played SC close.
Yes, they did.
But it's like, I mean – and SC looks like – USC looks like a pretty good team with one of the better quarterbacks. You don't want to overreact to the first 2 weeks, but one overreaction I'm comfortable with, Bill, is that quarterback at USC can play. The one that we saw against LSU, I know it's just a couple of games. That kid,
Nussmeier looked pretty good too.
Nussmeier looked pretty good too. Well, I mean, there's a reason LSU, despite just being 1-1, is a solid favorite, mm-hmm, in Columbia this weekend against South Carolina. I also think people might be reluctant to overreact to South Carolina against Kentucky. I feel like I'm representing the drive when I do this, but I voted in the in our ESPN 106.7 top 20, mm-hmm, and I threw South Carolina a vote. I think 2-0 South Carolina going on the road and winning like that in conference. I would say until someone beats them, I'm fine with 2-0 Nebraska getting votes. I'm fine with 2-0 South Carolina getting votes. I'm fine with 2-0 Cal getting votes in somebody's poll if they think they've earned it after going on the road and beating Auburn in week two. I think Cal would be, if you wanted to put them in your top 25.
Although, I would say that the other teams have wins over teams that were expected to do more than Auburn. Maybe not by Auburn people.
Talking to Adam Cole, who dropped in from the Opelika Auburn News yesterday. You can check that out on the podcast if you missed it. But talk to him on the Auburn Observer podcast. He's a voter in the AP poll. He threw Vandy a vote this week. 2-0 Vandy with the win over Virginia Tech in week one.
They're at Georgia State this week.
And if a solid favorite, I believe. Yeah.
When was the last time Vandy started 3-0? Did James Franklin's teams ever start 3-0?
I mean, I think that the team that famously got destroyed by Alabama started 2-0, right? The Vandy team that I think was, said, Alabama better get ready and then lost resoundingly to Alabama in 2017 or 2018. Like that one was an early 2-0 start, I think, for Vanderbilt.
That's what I'm thinking. I mean, I'm wondering if anybody has started 3-0 at Vandy in a long time.
Sure. 3-0 and with a couple of games in conference where they feel like maybe they've got something and a quarterback that they feel like can make some plays, which is
he can.
With all due respect to a lot of the guys who've been playing, I mean, it's been a while. Maybe Jordan Rodgers is the last guy that you felt like was there and who was capable of making, and this guy's probably more dangerous than
this guy's more of a playmaker.
More dangerous than Rodgers. I mean, then you'd get back to what, Cutler, right? I mean, you're dating back a long time to when you felt like Vandy had a dangerous playmaker.
2011, Vandy started 3-0.
How about that? So it would
James
be the first
Franklin's
time,
first year,
first time in a long time. Mm-hmm. If Vanderbilt can pull it off against Georgia State this weekend, so no, I think that it's still early. And these polls are, for entertainment purposes only. But I would think that there are a couple of teams with a couple of out-of-nowhere 2-0 starts where I feel like maybe, I would have absolutely no problem with somebody saying Boston College is actually in the top 25, I think, in the AP poll with a 2-0 start, including the win in Tallahassee against Florida State. That you asked me about my opinions on some of the, we were talking about the games he picked for Doug. The team Bill and Dan,
which is
less said the better about where we are in the standings.
Struggling.
You know what? Where are we in the standings?
We're only two games back of Doug.
It's early. It's early is where we are in the standings. But the only one I really felt like I had any sense of at all is that I just think, and I think Missouri's going to win, but I'm not going to be. And maybe they pull away and get a cover on the board. I feel like we're getting a competitive Missouri Boston College game.
I think it's got a chance to be a pretty interesting ball game. I mean, Missouri, they're scary, but I think BC is a well coached. I mean, it's going to be it's not going to be easy, I think, to romp over them.
Well coached team, veteran team. Mm-hmm. They went out and got a lot of older players in the portal, and they're leaning on being able to get as much out of them as they can before their college careers expire. It's a ball control offense. You saw what they did to Florida State. Tough at the line of scrimmage. I think Missouri's in for a fight, and I think that game's close in the second half.
334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. You can join us with any of your thoughts, questions, comments on the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar.
You can also text the show 334-564-1840 on the Drive text box presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast available wherever you get your podcasts.
We'll get to our first break of the afternoon. Come on in and join us here on the Thursday Drive.
Yellowwood knows that a five-star backyard is the place to make lasting memories, like roasting marshmallows.
Then we move on to play calling. And it seldom goes beyond that when the fact is there's running backs, receivers, and offensive linemen. And so any loss can be a combination of all those things or just a few of those things. But looking at our thing last week, would Thorne's problems be a combination or just solely on him of acting too slow or the offensive line not giving him enough time?
I think it is a combination of some of those things. I don't know that every time there was pressure, it was because Peyton was slow to react. That's just a comment that we made that at times it looked like the ball could have come out sooner because there appeared to be receivers open. So I think it's a combination of things.
The most curious thing Peyton did to me, and I've had people say, that we're probably not talking about plays where Peyton declined to hand it off, because there are a couple of those on the first few drives where there are RPOs where he has the option to hand off before going to the pass. And there's one that somebody pointed to where it might be the interception where he's hit, where you could say that ball maybe should have gone to Damari on the handoff before it's
what was the down and distance on that?
I might be confusing two plays for each other too.
I was thinking that was a third and
I think it might be a second down.
Sure.
It might be a second down play, but there are I think that folks the two most I thought the most peculiar thing Peyton was doing Saturday would be the decision to attempt deep shots to a covered Cam Coleman when there seemed to be more open underneath stuff. And that's a question of, was that Peyton Thorne making that decision in the moment? Was that something Peyton Thorne was coached to do all offseason? Is that something the coaching staff wants Peyton Thorne to do in that instance? And you don't know, but it happened a couple of times in the game.
No, you're right. And one thing that was said after the first scrimmage, when we got a chance to watch, is there were comments of, when you've got Cam Coleman, throw it up there and let him go after it. Now, that doesn't mean if you have somebody else wide open for a first down or for a larger gain that is a less difficult attempt. No, but I mean, it almost seemed like, it's like, well, I've got Cam. He's the guy that you're supposed to throw the ball to for those 50-50 shots, but neither of those were anywhere near 50-50.
And it's stark. If you watch the fourth and two and the third interception, the interception with 2 minutes left, both of them are deep sideline shots to Cam Coleman. It is stark, Bill, how open Robert Lewis has made himself on both those plays. I think 14 had a pretty solid game, even though he did. It's not really reflected.
Yeah, he only had one catch.
But I think 14's running open on a couple of those passing plays, and I think that might have been vexing to Hugh Freeze upon reviewing the game on Sunday and Monday. Hammer?
Well, to the running game, do you think the coaching staff had delusions of grandeur as far as passing goes and kind of left out leaning on the running game more? I would have seen.
That's a really good question, and something that you can blame us in the media for not really asking.
I mean, we've asked
a little bit about not running the ball, yeah, but nobody really asked specifically, was the game plan to throw the ball most of the time?
I would guess, based on the way Auburn came out on those first two drives, that the answer to that question is yes. Maybe they were taking what Cal gives them in that situation. And then the third drive, Bill, is the interception on the first play on the ball that goes off of Cam Coleman's hands and gets tipped up and picked off.
Mm-hmm.
Auburn continues to lean heavily on Thorne and throw the ball on the next couple of drives. You know, I think Auburn expected. We've speculated, Bill, Auburn may have been full of confidence after the way the offense performed against Alabama A&M, and I think they may have been of the belief that they were going to be able to throw the ball on Cal consistently, especially after things went on that first drive, and then it turned out to maybe not be the best decision considering the adjustments Cal made.
Well, with New Mexico's defense, we're just not going to really learn much this week, are we?
It's hard to imagine that we will, because their defense statistically is the worst in the nation.
Unfortunately, the one thing I think we could learn this week is that it should not be Peyton Thorne anymore. I think we could learn that with a really bad.
That. You could learn that Auburn has. If Auburn goes out and sputters offensively, regardless, then there's some things that there's still some questions.
Thorne can't convince people against New Mexico that things are going to be all better when Auburn goes into SEC play. And Hank Brown probably can't go in and convince people that he should be the quarterback against Arkansas with a good game against New Mexico, unless Peyton Thorne plays really poorly.
Yeah.
I think in the same New Mexico.
Hank
game.
Could make a statement that he deserves to at least be considered, but yeah, it would be difficult if both play very well to say, okay, we have to make a change.
It would take Thorne playing his way out of the job against New Mexico, I think, to make, and then you'd still want to see something positive from Hank Brown.
Okay, well, thanks, guys.
Appreciate the call, Yellowhammer.
Yeah, Thorne can't put too much to bed against New Mexico.
Nothing good. He can't put too much good to bed.
Exactly. I mean, and I've sort of, I was asked earlier today about this, and I think it's probably what I'm going to write for the Bryan Matthews pick'em. I would probably go with Thorne for the first two drives on Saturday to make the statement that he's still Auburn's first option, Auburn's best option. It's still his team. But I think it's important to get Hank Brown reps with the first team offense and with the starters in case you need to go with him against Arkansas early on. So I would say
maybe. I don't see the advantage if the game is going pretty well of waiting and waiting to bring Hank Brown in.
And if you want to say three drives for Peyton and then go, I'm flexible on this, but I think there are multiple reasons to see Hank Brown with the first team offense early against New Mexico on Saturday. I'm not advocating for Hank Brown to get the start. I think it probably should be Peyton, and I think it probably, unless Peyton is disastrous against New Mexico, it probably should be Peyton against Arkansas. But I think it's important to get Hank Brown some first team reps against New Mexico. One, to see how your backup quarterback looks with the rest of the offense in there.
Yeah, you want to see what he looks like when he's competing against the same level of competition as your starting quarterback and with playing with the same guys on the first team.
And you don't want his first reps in that situation to be against Arkansas or Oklahoma or Georgia.
That's not fair.
No, you want them to be in a game like this one on Saturday. So I would say the first two drives are Peyton's. The next two drives are Hank Brown, and then you evaluate what you want to do after that, considering the score, considering the circumstances, stuff like that. But I would say at least two drives for Hank Brown in the first half with the starters.
I guess I just sort of would like to see it the other way. I mean, let Peyton know, hey, we're going to give Hank a shot. You're going to get your opportunity and see how Hank does at the outset.
If it were a bigger game than New Mexico, they'd probably start Peyton, though, right?
Yes.
So that's sort of why I say start Peyton anyway. Like, if he's still your first option.
I would like to see how Hank responds to just being the first guy out there.
You know, in 04, we talked about this a little bit yesterday, and it's a different situation, but the first game in 04, Auburn went to Brandon Cox on the second drive. It was Jason for the first drive. It was Brandon for the second one because they wanted him in as early as possible for a couple of reasons. I think they were letting Jason know how serious they were about the need to get some production out of the quarterback position. I think they also wanted to see how their relatively inexperienced backup quarterback looked in the game with the first team around him. And so they got to do that with a couple of drives with Brandon really early.
See, I'm more in line with that. If you're going to start Peyton, I'd say, Peyton, you got the first drive. Hank, you got the second.
I'd be okay with that. I mean, that's where, I mean, it's, and I think we're on the same page there, where even if it's still Peyton's team and Peyton's offense, this is an opportunity to get first team reps for Hank Brown.
Mm-hmm.
When you do it is up for debate, I would say, in the first half. A couple of drives for Hank Brown with the first team offense around him.
334-321-1390. That is the drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. Little programming note: we have heard from Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. We'll check in with him after the bottom of the hour break. But right now, is that him? No, okay. Let's get back to the drive hotline. Who've we got?
We got Dan on the line.
Hey, Dan.
Hey, guys. Is it possible that, like, the first game, Peyton had, like, all the time in the world to throw, and so he was taking his time throwing the ball? And then, obviously, if you go back and you look at the film, it's just he's holding onto the ball too long. He's not making the decisions quick enough. Is it possible that he can just, like, go in there and just say, hey, I just got to be more decisive. We need to call, like, more quick hit plays. And then he kind of just turns it around. So I know everyone's kind of already ready to move on. But I'm just wondering, I mean, you spent so much time with the guy. It's possible he just had a bad game. And everything that could go wrong went wrong across the board, not just with him,
I'm sure it's possible. The thing is, when you're looking for proof of, of what you're going to expect from this point on, you had some instances last year, and you're hoping that you're not seeing that and you're past that this year. Yes, it's possible, but it had better not happen again.
Dan, I wondered if Auburn, in hindsight, regretted not having the opportunity to throw more short stuff against Alabama A&M and work on some of that some more. Being able to hit 450-foot home runs against Alabama A&M was a lot of fun that night. But when Cal took the deep stuff away, it showed that Auburn was a little bit rusty on everything else in that passing game. And so, no, I think that would be, that would be a focus for me when Peyton Thorne's in the game on Saturday. Is I think you got to complete some underneath stuff, and you got to get some yards after the catch opportunities for these receivers, and you got to get stuff that Peyton can get out quickly, because he's going to face some of those. I mean, what defenses did on 4th and 2 against Auburn, which was an all out blitz with the outside corners covered up 1-to-1, and it was pretty much everybody else. Middle of the field was open. Like teams will do that if they think it'll work.
Yeah, if they think you can't use the middle of the field, you're not gonna see that part or throw the ball there. Absolutely.
And I think a couple of completions to break that a couple and you can attack that a variety of ways. But utilizing something, the one way you can't do it is by keeping the ball in the quarterback's hands for a long time in the pocket. Like you need something mm-hmm. that gets whether it's a screen or a draw or something that gets rid of his something that gets the ball out. But I think that working on some of that on Saturday would probably be a pretty good idea.
Well, what if the game plan was to have a concerted effort to get Cam the ball? He's spending so much time trying to find a way to get Cam the ball instead of really just looking at the whole entire offense. What if that was the game plan? Because I was wondering why, Cam only got two catches in the first game. So I said, okay, we're definitely going to go to him the second game. And it looked like in the first half, that's all we tried to do.
Yeah, right. You're right. I mean, there was no question.
Maybe to the detriment of the offense, right, Dan?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I'm saying if I go back and look at it, if I'm the quarterback, I look back and say, man, I'm sitting here, I'm spending so much time focusing on one guy, and I've got guys running wide open. I need to definitely, fix that. It just seems like that's, the plays were there. It just needed to be, a little more quicker and decisive just to make it happen. But I don't know. I definitely, if I put him out there, for two or three drives, and if we struggle, then throw the backup quarterback in there. But I mean, if he comes out there and you go down the field and score two touchdowns and everything, if he's completing every pass, well, then you're going to go, okay. I don't know if you want to create it.
Yeah. I'm still, if Peyton plays well, I'm still okay with getting Hank a drive or two, just so the first time you ever go to Hank in an emergency, it's not his first action with the first team ever in a game. You know what I mean? Like, and that doesn't mean because
I agree with that. I agree with him getting drives, but I just think if the starting quarterback goes out there and he's doing really, really good, and we're running the offense the way we're supposed to run it, not just drop back and throw a bomb, but I mean, like, we're really looking like an offense going from running play to pass play to running play, and the offense is humming, then I think you probably let him get his confidence up, and then you bring Hank in the second half.
I had somebody suggest to me, runs. Dan, I had somebody suggest to me in that situation, maybe you give Peyton the first half in that instance, and then. But I think that's
against a team that's given up 600 yards a game. I mean, you better have a good first half, and then what are they going to have left in the second half if get destroyed like that?
So I think there are pros and cons to and the impact it could have on Peyton's confidence, even if he plays well, is an interesting thought. But I think there's an opportunity here. You don't have another game like this for a while. It feels like an opportunity to get Hank Brown some reps, even if you still want to send the message that it's Peyton Thorne's team and Peyton Thorne's offense. It still feels like a chance to. Yeah. After a couple drives. Hey, we got Ferguson coming up after the break. Appreciate it, Dan.
Good hearing from you, Dan.
Great stuff, Dan.
We need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Yes, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer joins us on the other side. So stick with us here on the Thursday Drive.
Your Auburn football game day destination is Wings 95. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Thursday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio. And before we get to Justin Ferguson, a couple of things. Well, one thing I wanted to pass along. If you're looking for a couple of tickets for this weekend's ball game, We have
Bill
I
knows
know,
a guy.
I know of two pairs. Well, I know one guy, and I know myself. I've got two extra, and Tex has a pair. So we've got it. There's a pair of tickets in section 31, which are really good seats. Now I got a pair of tickets in section 1. So so if you're looking for a couple of tickets, and we're not looking to take advantage of anybody, we could probably help you.
Is Tex? Yeah. How? What are we? Are we talking? We talking donations? We talking?
I don't know. He just said get in touch with him. I promise you, it's not more. No.
I'll tell you what. With Tex, and I don't want to speculate here. If it's someone who doesn't usually get to go to an Auburn home football game, and especially a child who doesn't usually get to go to an Auburn home football game. Mm-hmm. I imagine that's who Tex really would like the tickets to go to.
Yeah, that's usually the case.
Right. So I would think if anyone who knows someone in that situation, give us a call during the commercial break or get in touch with Bill and that'd be something that I think Tex would really appreciate.
All right, let's get to the drive hotline and welcome in our regular Thursday third here in the studio. He's got a lot of things going on, though, but we appreciate him spending a little time with us here in hour number one of the drive, and that's Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. Ferg, how you doing today?
I'm doing all right. How are y'all?
We're doing fine, man. This week seems to have dragged, has it not? I mean, I don't know why, but
I'll tell you why. When you have a game that you can talk about for several days, it feels like it's taken a while
It's one that you want to put in the rearview mirror and get behind you, and it's like, God, it's still the last thing that we're talking about.
Ferg, we were I don't know how much you got to hear of the conversation. We called you, I think, right after it ended, but we were talking about utilization of the quarterback on Saturday, and you know, I think I've sort of landed on I would – you know, without knowing what happened at practice this week, I would probably go with Peyton Thorne for the first couple of drives. I'm flexible on that number, two or three, with the intention of giving Hank Brown a couple of drives with the first team offense, not just to see how it looks against New Mexico, but also because you probably don't want Hank Brown's first drive or two or first play with the first team offense to be in case of emergency against Arkansas or Oklahoma or Georgia. And then you can evaluate how Peyton and Hank did against New Mexico. But my thinking is, hey, Peyton's probably your first, he's probably your first guy up against Arkansas. And so he should be your first guy up against New Mexico. And he should get probably a couple of drives, to right the ship following what happened against Cal.
I, on the other hand, would like to see Hank quicker than that. If you don't start him, I think let both of them know that first two series, you're each going to get one. You know, do your best out there. I would like to see Hank before the game appears to be getting out of reach.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's very fair. And I think the New Mexico defense is going to provide those opportunities. The Mexico offense looks tricky. Mm-hmm. They got some dudes, and they got a quarterback who's pretty fun. That defense has been kind of run through the last their first two games of the season. So I do think you're going to get some opportunities to see different guys in on offense. And so I think that's a decent strategy. It's going to be interesting to see where it goes, because I think everybody knows coming into this game, no matter what happens, no matter what the final score is on Saturday, I don't know if you're going to get anything definitive about this quarterback situation against New Mexico. I think it's going to, as a tendency, to probably look more like Alabama A&M than it looks like Cal. So I think for Auburn, you've got to engineer ways to give those opportunities to Hank Brown if that's what you want to do. And I think they do, because I think both of you guys have the same kind of mindset here. Is, Peyton Thorne may continue to be the starter, but he's probably going to be on an extremely short leash. That's how it's been described to me by a couple of people this week with the program, just kind of talking about the situation. But, you're right. You don't want it to be Arkansas next week or Georgia coming up or Oklahoma in a couple of weeks, and it'd be like, okay, once again, the Peyton Thorne thing at quarterback is not working against a quality opponent. All right, Hank Brown, go get him, slugger. It's you're throwing him into the fire. I do think you're going to want to play him in something that resembles an actual competitive football game before you get to that, and earlier the better, I think, is the case against New Mexico.
Yeah, I believe the only thing that could come out of this, a definitive answer that would come out of this, would be if Peyton just struggled against New Mexico. Because anything correct. He does well, it's like, well, let's see it against a real quality opponent.
To me, the only way we come out of Saturday certain that Hank Brown should be the starter against Arkansas would be if Peyton Thorne has a disastrous performance against New Mexico. Like that would be when you say,
and Hank plays well.
And
there's no question Hank is the better quarterback against New Mexico.
Yeah. Yes.
And that's not likely with New Mexico's defense, honestly.
No, it's not. And I think, you know, there might be some ways you can evaluate and track that even if both of them come in and lead drives that are mm-hmm. good. But yeah, I mean, I think that's the thing that you got to keep in mind here. And also, I want to caution everybody, you know, I'm not trying to rain on anybody's parade. I like Hank Brown. I think Hank Brown's got some fun arm talent. I think he's got a gunslinger mentality that's good to see in a quarterback. I will caution you, though. If you look at kind of the last 20-something years of Auburn football, and when Auburn's had to make these mid-season quarterback changes, when it's not an injury, it's just, hey, we don't like where we're going with our offense, let's turn the page. You don't really see just dramatic jumps up in quality. And you got to also keep in mind, like, there's a reason why Peyton Thorne remained the starter in the mm-hmm. preseason. And it never really was in question. So don't expect miracles. Now, if he comes out and lights it up and it looks like a step forward for whatever reason, sure. But I wouldn't bank on that just because history suggests you're kind of more in a sense of maybe it'll look different. But also, he's a kid. He's a redshirt freshman. He hadn't had to play a ton. I think your best-case scenario for Auburn is maybe you run into a situation, ironically enough, that Cal had last year. What did Cal do? Cal had two transfer quarterbacks in. They tried both of them, and Sam Jackson and Ben Finley. Neither one worked long-term. They turned to a guy in Fernando Mendoza who was a two-star. He was going to go to Yale before Cal swooped in the last month. This is a guy that nothing about him really screamed early career power conference starting quarterback, but they gave it to him. He took it he took the bull by both horns, and he made that job his. And you know, they've been better for it. This Cal team's been better for it. Maybe you get one of those in Hank Brown, but those cases are more rare than necessarily, you know, a situation where, hey, it might look different, but you're going to have to be patient with the other guy too.
Yeah, we set the. I didn't realize they'd mentioned the Yale thing on the TV broadcast apparently as well. But we set the internet on fire with that on the Observer podcast. I made Auburn memes mentioning that Mendoza was a Yale commit before coming to Cal. So let's talk about if it sticks with Peyton Thorne. Let's talk about other ways the offense could look different. We had a caller bemoaning the lack of short and intermediate stuff thus far through two games from the Auburn passing offense. The running backs did not touch the ball a ton in the first half against.
They barely touched it a pound.
Yeah, against Cal. Like what do you think? What do you think might change around the quarterback position for the Auburn offense, Ferg?
Yeah, that's my thing. I wrote it this week in the film room. We can look at the quarterback play, and it was not good for Auburn for Peyton Thorne, and they got to get better. But you're fooling yourself if you think the only problem with Auburn is their quarterback. Like, this offense looked bad without it, or outside of that, you know, I should say. And it's everybody involved. It's Hugh Freeze. It's Derek Nix. It's the offensive line's got to play better. You got to have more from some of these guys, and especially from your coaching staff, to try to make something happen. Now, let's start with the short passing situation. You saw in that Cal game, it looked like Peyton Thorne was trying to go for the home run a little too often, or maybe a lot too often in mm-hmm. some cases, when there were options underneath and there were options that you could go to. There was the fourth and two where you have two guys running underneath wide open. You gotta hit those plays. So whether you have to sit here and say, hey, don't go for the home run, like teach him, try to re-engineer him to look at it differently and go through that progression, or maybe not be as risky with those one-on-one balls. And I think there's a good shot that doesn't happen this week just because Cam Coleman's probably not going to play. So you can do some of that, but you can also engineer those kind of ways. Try some more stuff that's kind of quicker. I think about the second touchdown drive, the one in the fourth quarter. There's a stack screen to Malcolm Simmons that really works. And it's something like, okay, you didn't really see a lot of that earlier in the game. So I feel like while Peyton Thorne needs to do a better job of, you know, reading and reacting and maybe not trying to go for, you know, all or nothing with his throws, I think Hugh Freeze, Derek Nix, Ken Austin, everybody involved with play calling and game planning with Auburn's offense can do a better job of engineering ways to get that to work. I also think you can run the ball. You've got to be able to run the ball in this game. I know everyone wants to see the passing game. I know everybody wants to see that lit up. New Mexico's run defense is really bad, guys. Like, they've averaged, like, it's almost 8 yards a carry in two games against Montana State and against Arizona. Auburn should be able to run the ball in this one and lean on that some more, because even if you came into this season thinking, hey, Auburn's going to be better throwing the ball, Peyton Thorne's going to be better because he's got more talent at wide receiver, this is going to be a Hugh Freeze off. Even if you were optimistic, I think a lot of us would come into the season and say, hey, the strength of this team is probably going to end up still being the running game. You got that running back room coming back, Jarquez Hunter, and got some depth there, and your offensive line was objectively better at run blocking than they were pass protecting. And yet, the first couple of games, you have not seen Auburn lean on that as much, and I think this is a reset opportunity to go ahead and do that. And, you know, that offensive line shuffle they could have this week, if they go with the five that we saw on Tuesday in practice, if that's their starting lineup moving forward, well, that's Auburn's four best run blockers so far this season by a pretty good margin in a starting five. So that would be very helpful.
Ferg, a key point defensively before we let you go.
Yeah, get off to a good start. Like, you do not want New Mexico to hang around with you, and they've got every capability to hang around with you. They got a dual-threat quarterback who's a lot of fun. Ask Arizona. Arizona gave up a lot of points early. And had, you know, New Mexico hanging around in that game for a while. You're coming off of, you know, a deflating loss, and the last thing anybody wants to see is you struggle with New Mexico. So for Auburn, get off to a really good start on defense. Dory Mausi, several other guys we talked to this week said, hey, we just didn't do our jobs in the first half against Cal. When they did in the second half, they did pretty well. I think they have the ability to do that again against New Mexico, even though they got some tricks up their sleeve. With the amount of quarterback play they've got and what you can expect from a Bronco Mendenhall team, they're going to probably play pretty tough. And the other thing is like, New Mexico's going to play nothing to lose. They're playing with house money.
Yeah.
They know this season was going to be a rebuilding year. So they're going to come in fearless. You don't want to give them any hope, and you don't want to give your fans more reasons to be frustrated. So defense got to get out to a fast start. Don't let New Mexico hang around too long.
Yeah, I agree with all that. Justin, let everybody know what you've got going at the Observer and how folks, of course, can get it if they're not.
Yeah, despite the most recent podcast, people should subscribe.
I once again, I can't thank Dan enough for running the show this week. I've been in Florida. I've been in Gator Country here. I'm actually driving back right now. These last couple of days, visiting my grandfather who's been in the hospital. But him and Adam Cole, Dan and Adam Cole, did a great preview podcast on the Auburn-New Mexico game. You can check that out if you're a subscriber. Ton of stuff this week on the quarterback situation, offensive line shakeups, injury reports, defense. Got a ton of stuff from the Cal game, looking ahead to the Mexico game in our newsletters. And pretty big mailbag tomorrow talking about some of the same stuff we just talked about right now. So auburnobserver.com, sign up, get all the emails, get all the podcasts, get all the newsletters, and check out what Dan and Adam did in the preview episode because I thought it was really, really good.
Ferg, thanks for joining us, man. Really appreciate it. Have a safe trip. We'll see you Saturday.
Yeah, absolutely. See you guys. Thank you.
Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer joining us here on the Thursday Drive. Need to get to our final break of hour number one. Come on in and join us.
For air that is cool and clean, call SensiGreen 334.
He's usually here with us in the studio. Now, a reminder, in hour number two, David Paschal from the Chattanooga Times Free Press and his show Sport Talk on WGOW in Chattanooga is wrapping up, as a matter of fact, right about now.
I'll tell you, one of the things we'll talk about with Paschal, I'll tell you a team, you don't want to overreact, a team I am increasingly sold on through just 2 weeks of the season. is Tennessee. Like, yeah, you got, yeah, you got now, a pretty now, good team there. I know you don't want to overreact.
I've got to find out exactly what NC State is, but no, Tennessee is
That was Jason's reaction yesterday Tennessee when I mentioned I'm thinking Tennessee's offense is pretty real. And, yep. and he mentioned, well, NC State's made people look like world beaters early in the season before.
And those teams
have sputtered in conference play. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. Yeah, you're right. We'll see what Tennessee looks like. They got Oklahoma next week.
That is right. And then at 5:30, Tiger Takes, going to be moving to Wednesdays, but this week, once again, it's on Thursdays. Hey, a reminder, again, if you're looking for a couple of tickets for the Auburn-New Mexico game tomorrow, you can just call us. We can get you in touch with Tex or get you the info on those tickets. So we're halfway done here on the Thursday Drive. Stick with us. We're right back with Hour 2. Join us by phone. Hope you had a chance to hear that. If you've missed that or any part of the show or any shows, we encourage you to check out the podcasts.
That's right. Podcasts of The Drive available however you listen to podcasts. Go to your favorite podcasting platform and search for The Drive with Bill Cameron, or go to ESPNAU.com and use the Podcast Center. All of that presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. And we got a busy hour too. With Tiger Takes at the bottom of the hour?
Yeah, we're normally going to have Tiger Takes. We're moving it to Wednesdays. But Eugene Asante, of course, is our guest, and it is sponsored by 12K Salon. So we'll be moving it to Wednesdays starting next week. We tried to do that this week, but just things came up, and we're unable to get it done in time for yesterday's show. So that'll be on at the bottom of the hour coming up a little later on, then it will move to Wednesday starting next week. Want to remind you that hour number two of The Drive is brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. And we're about to head to the Drive hotline. We'll get back to that in just a little while, because we have a special guest coming up and joining us, as he does each Thursday at this time. He's just wrapped up his show, Sport Talk, on WGOW in Chattanooga. And, of course, he has been with the Chattanooga Times Free Press for quite a while, covering the Southeastern Conference. And that's our good friend David Pascal, who we now welcome in. David, how you doing today?
I'm doing great, Bill. I hope you and Dan are doing marvelous as well.
Yeah, it's been, I guess it's not a huge surprise to you. It's been a pretty busy week. We've heard from some folks we haven't heard from in a long time after Auburn's performance, if you could call it that, last week against Cal.
David, we had a couple of mandatory attendance shows on Monday and Tuesday after a game like that.
Yeah, that one surprised a whole lot of people. I guess if you were to take our tape from last week, and you know, we thought this would be a 2-touchdown, 17-point kind of game, and I guess it started that way when it was 7-0. But whew, that surprised a whole lot of people, and that one's tough because you know, I know with the whole offensive line quarterback situation. I know Auburn had hoped that would be upgraded, and what you saw against Cal was not upgraded.
No, it wasn't. And, I mean, Auburn had Too Tall Miller go down, tried to come back in the ball game with a hip injury. Don't think we're going to see him for a while. They're moving some things around there on the offensive line. Dylan Wade, who was a starting left tackle last year, looks like he's going to get the start at right tackle. So they'll bring in, The old reliable Tate Johnson, who's been around for a long time, is probably going to get the first shot there at the right guard. But the left tackle, which has been a problem in each of the first two ball games, Tyler Johnson played better in the opening game. The redshirt freshman this past week, he really struggled. And Percy Lewis, the transfer from Mississippi State, played a little better. But those are the two guys there at the left tackle. So Auburn's hoping to solidify things there against a New Mexico defense that is they've been dreadful through two games, giving up nearly 600 yards a game and 96 points in those two games.
Yeah, you touch it on the offensive line. I mean, it's no secret just how important that is, and you just think about the the machine that Kirby Smart has going on in Athens. I mean, for three straight years, they've lost two linemen to the NFL draft, and they just keep replenishing. Mm-hmm. They've been a Joe Moore Award finalist for three straight years. You know, Tennessee's a unique situation on the offensive line because they're kind of the best. And I wrote about this in today's Times Free Press, just talking about offensive lines, just how Tennessee's kind of got your best combination of homegrown guys with transfer portal guys. I mean, you think about Cooper Mays at center and Javonte Spraggins at right guard. They've been, you know, they're in their fifth years in Knoxville, but then you add an Andre Carrick from Texas, a John Campbell from Miami, and a Lance Hurd from LSU, and they've got a really nice offensive line. But, I mean, you know, you've got some teams that, as good as Alabama is, you know, their offensive line is going through some growing pains right now. They had 70 yards in penalties last week just from the offensive line. And then you think about a program like Oklahoma. They've got five new starters up front, and it's showing. I mean, they played Houston last week, and they had 289 yards and punted eight times. So, I mean, it's no secret that the offensive line is a huge part of your football team, and it's revealed itself early so far in the SEC, really early.
That's a dangerous stretch of games coming up for Oklahoma. Tulane is no joke. Played Kansas State close on Saturday, and then they've got Tennessee and Auburn. And so I think that's a crucial stretch. That's one of the more – I mean, I know people are going to focus on Alabama, Wisconsin, and Missouri, Boston College, for that matter, who had that as a top 25 matchup going into the season. But I think Tulane, Oklahoma is one of your more interesting non-conference games in the SEC this week. I want to see if Oklahoma can distance themselves from a good non-power conference team coming into Norman.
Yeah, I mean, there have been times through the years, starting with you know, like the Switzer era, where an Oklahoma Tulane score might be 56-3. I mean, we're at the point now where I think a lot of us would be shocked if Oklahoma won this game by 17 or 20. I fully expect that to be a tight game too.
Yeah, no question. I mean, and John Summerall, a lot of folks around here are familiar with him, the outstanding job he did at Troy, and. I think he's gonna have Tulane competitive. We will see. I wanted to get your thoughts.
Willie Fritz got a new job too, right? He's at Houston now.
Yeah.
Right. He got the. I mean, Tulane's been winning. They played Ole Miss really close last year. Remember that game that was the same day as Auburn, Cal, and Alabama, Texas. There was an excellent non conference game. I think it was maybe the only regular season game Tulane lost, or one of them. I mean, it was a close game. So yeah, I think that's a sneaky game for Oklahoma. Where else did you want to go, Bill?
No, I wanted to get David's thoughts on. All right, moving away from Auburn's performance last week, what was the most impressive game to you last week involving the SEC? I mean, it's hard to say what Texas did at Michigan, but
South Carolina gets a vote. But
yeah, South Carolina's got to be in there too. And of course, you mentioned Tennessee just destroying NC State. I mean, there were some impressive performances by SEC teams last week.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the two UTs and their different shades of orange were certainly impressive. I mean, obviously Texas had the biggest stage of the entire day. And went up there and just really, really just, obviously, we all saw it. I mean, just absolutely dominated. The Tennessee thing was unique. I mean, the only thing that could take away from that would be, is NC State really that good? Right. I mean, that very first Thursday night, they trailed Western Carolina in the fourth quarter. So, I mean, that was a ranked team, but that may be just a mirage as far as whether NC State's any good. I've said it before. I mean, Tennessee's got six multi-year seniors on the offensive line, five multi-year seniors on the defensive line. They look like an Alabama and a Georgia walking off the bus. And so when you see a Tennessee and an NC State walking into Bank of America Stadium, it's different. I mean, it's like going back 25 years and watching Alabama walk in and Ole Miss walk in. They just don't look the same. But Tennessee has really done a nice job defensively. I mean, if you look at when Heupel first got there, you know, that first year, that defense gave up 500 yards five times. They actually gave up 600 yards a couple of those. So it was a very gambling, feast or famine type defense. They were really good with tackles for losses, but they would just get pounded for yards. And now they are on a – if you go back to that bowl game against Iowa that they won 35-0, they've gone three straight games without allowing a defensive touchdown. That has not happened since the 1985 SEC title team that you know stopped Bo Jackson early that season. So Tennessee is super impressive, and then yeah, you touched on South Carolina, and that was certainly a game that surprised a whole
what
lot
a
of
shocker.
Folks. That it just really cracks me up with Shane Beamer. I mean, he wears the emotions on his sleeve, and I mean, he sits there berating the media, saying there were some lazy narratives out there, guys. You know, talking to his beat pack, but you know, the week before after they beat Old Dominion, he's the one out there saying we've got a redshirt freshman quarterback and a freshman left tackle. We're going to be experiencing some growing pains this year. You know, so it's like, well, which one is it?
You know, a team that would probably not get many votes as far as the most impressive SEC team so far because of the level of competition they've done it against, that probably still deserves some consideration. You know, Ole Miss is sitting there 128-3, the final score of the two Ole Miss games so far this year. They're going up to Wake Forest as a overwhelming favorite against a Demon Deacons team that was picked to finish near the bottom of the ACC. How about, you talk about familiar names in college football, how about old Hank Bachmeier, former Boise State, Louisiana Tech quarterback? He beat Florida State as a true freshman in 2019, starting for Boise State in that game that I believe had to be moved because of a hurricane. It was going to be in Jacksonville. They play it in Tallahassee or vice versa, something like that. But he took over in the Wake Forest opener, and it looks like he's going to be your quarterback for Wake Forest Ole Miss this Saturday. I don't think the Ole Miss buzzsaw is slowing down in North Carolina, David.
No, I don't either. And to your point, Dan, I mean, I do think if there was a team that I just had to wager on each week, Ole Miss would be way up there for me to that point, because they just get ahead of you so quickly. And of course, the team they played last week, Middle Tennessee, you know, they had struggled to beat Tennessee Tech the first week of the year, so I thought that line was a little too low. I mean, I think that Wake Forest line's just a little bit over three touchdowns. You know, it would not surprise me if Ole Miss went out there and put out another 49-10 or something. I mean, they're just, you know, that Lane Kiffin, we've talked about it. I mean, after the Georgia game last year, he even admitted, he's like, look, we're getting better, but we look nothing like that roster. We need to do something about it in the trenches. And they went out and did some things in the trenches. And with Jackson Dart, I mean, they can move the ball so quick. They're like Tennessee as far as it takes them no time to score.
Yeah, well, you mentioned we've mentioned both of these teams. Kentucky last week just absolutely dominated at home by South Carolina. Hello, welcome. Let's welcome in the dogs. How can this one be competitive? I can't see it.
The only way I can see it, Bill, is the last two times Georgia has gone to Lexington, they've scored 14 and 16.
Uh-huh.
And as good as Georgia is, and they are a thoroughly good team across the board, they have been just notoriously, since Carson Beck has been quarterback, they have been notoriously slow starters.
Starting.
I mean, they
mm-hmm.
actually trailed in seven of their eight. Well, if you include the Alabama you know, the championship game last year, they trailed in eight of their nine SEC games at some point. Now some could be as quick as Jalen Wright scoring a 75-yard touchdown on the first play for Tennessee, and that was all Tennessee did all game long. But, you know, they were down 14-3 to South Carolina. They were down forever against Auburn. Really, the Kentucky game in Athens last year was the only time they just ran away and hid for somebody. So it would be something like that. I mean, it would be, you know, Georgia moves the ball well between the 20s, then bogs down, and, you know, the next thing you know, it's 9-3 late in the half. You know, that would be the way. I mean, Georgia just, like I said, as good as they've been, they just tend to start slow. So that's how I think that game could stay in that. I think that line's about 23.5, 24. It would not surprise me if Georgia didn't pull the line and won just like 31-10 or something.
I got a sneaking suspicion Bill O'Brien and Boston College keep it closer than the 17.
16 and 17. Yeah,
something I've seen there in Columbia. I think Missouri's winning that game. I'd be surprised if Boston College pulled that off, but I think we could be in for a competitive game throughout. Maybe I'm blowing the Florida State game out of proportion. But I thought Boston College looked sharp.
They did, and I mean that's a program that has a quarterback that can do things, and that changes the dynamic of a game. I remember when Tennessee got upset by Georgia State the first game of the 2019 season. Georgia State had a quarterback that could do a lot of things, and Tennessee didn't. But, you know, Missouri's the one team that I, you know, we all know what they looked like last year. We all know how special of a season they had. Just because of their opponents, and there are always better games on, nothing against them. I've just seen next to nothing of Missouri to this point. So I'll be curious to watch a lot of that game, too, because I just have no feel for Missouri right now because I hadn't watched a lick of their game.
Alabama at Madison, 11 o'clock game. Usually, you usually like that as a road team, although I guess, you know, if you're in the Big Ten, you're used to those early kicks. You see this one being close? I don't know that I do.
I don't know that I do either. I mean, this is just not the same Wisconsin of 10 years ago. And so, you know, I think who knows? Maybe South Florida in a way will be. I know that Kalen DeBoer said this is not a wake up call or anything like that. But I do think that you know, maybe they got that performance out of their system and they build from that, and you see a much better Milroe, you see an offensive line not committing so many penalties. You know, defensively, they've been really good. I think they've third down conversions. They've allowed 5 out of 35 through two games, so that's pretty doggone impressive. Yeah. You know, they certainly don't have anybody that can keep up with Ryan Williams. So I think Alabama's got the possibility to make a good statement here. I think it could certainly stay close for a bit, but I would think at some point just the talent and size of Bama breaks free.
What in the world? Did you have something on Wisconsin Bama? You probably know what I'm about to say.
Yeah.
What in the world do you make of the game in Gainesville?
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I wanted to hear.
How can you put any amount of money on that and feel confident in any direction?
Yeah. No, that's it's intervention time. If you got action on if you got action on Florida, if you got action on Florida A&M, we got to talk.
The weirdest thing about this game is this, because y'all are historians too, this is the fifth time that Texas A&M and Florida have played since Texas A&M's been in the league. They played Georgia once.
Right.
That just makes no sense to me.
Florida's played them more than they played Auburn, probably, since A&M's joined the league.
They have.
I would think so. But, you know, I know Napier, you know, if I was coach, I wouldn't give out any secrets how I'm handling the Lagway merch thing. I mean, they just look so brutal against Miami. I mean, I do think even though Texas A&M's got the first-year coach and Florida's got the third-year coach, I mean, it just seems like Texas A&M is a little more, even though it's a first-year program, they just seem a little more stable, I should say. So, I mean, if I had to put something, I would go for I would give the talent edge to Texas A&M. Mm-hmm. But, again, I mean, you know, they're – what have you seen from them? I mean, a Notre Dame team came in and beat you by 10 and then turned around and lost at home by Northern Illinois. So who knows what they're thinking?
Yeah, and the game's in Gainesville, but it's not like that's been great for the Gators lately either. So.
Didn't stop Miami.
Yeah, no kidding. And then
– right, because both of those – neither one of those programs, you know, they both have loud places to play. But if you look in the last 5 or 10 years, it's not like there aren't plenty of examples of people going into both of those places and winning. Auburn's gone to Kyle Field a bunch and won.
Well, there are a couple of programs in the SEC that have to really emphasize the atmosphere more than the impact it's had on wins.
Right.
Unfortunately, Auburn is getting that way after another home loss this weekend. But yeah, Florida and A&M absolutely would be two programs you could say that about.
Yep. And then
you know, and it was. You know, real quick, because I thought what you're saying, the point you just brought up, it was interesting. I mean, being a writer, and there's sometimes I'll be like, man, that guy's got a good story angle. And sometimes I'm like, yeah, I'm going to stay away from that. But, like, at SEC Media Days, I know some of these coaches were being asked about how tough it is to play at Jordan-Hare Stadium, you know, because of what they did against Georgia last year and Bama. But I'm just like, are y'all just, like, leaving the New Mexico State game out of this?
Yeah, no kidding. Sadly, yeah. There are a lot of Auburn people that like to forget about that.
It wasn't me asking those questions. I mean,
you realize while we're talking about Auburn, bless her heart, I've got a niece who is a senior, and I mean Auburn is 18 and 22. She's been a student there. That just blows the mind.
But
I timed it perfect. I was there for 3 straight SEC championships. But I hate it that because I've got a bunch of friends of mine that have students down there and. I mean, you just want them to have and the thing is, Auburn's really good in a lot of other sports. I mean, you think about how good basketball's been and golf and now women's soccer. But, we all know that football drives the boat, and it's just like it is wild to see them struggling for as long as they've struggled.
Yeah, the thought that an Auburn senior has seen a below 500 football team over the course of their Auburn careers, and they've also celebrated a men's basketball regular season championship and a men's basketball tournament championship in different seasons. In their Auburn tenure is something that would have, as a graduate from the aughts.
That's bizarro world.
It
really feels like it. I got to get your thoughts on the game in Columbia, South Carolina, with LSU going in as a touchdown or a little bit more than that favorite over the South Carolina team that played so well last week.
Yeah, and I mean, like I said, there's not a more emotional coach in the league than Shane Beamer, and who knows, maybe they'll get geeked up. And you know, there were a lot of empty seats that first game against Old Dominion, and I don't know if it'll be jam packed or not, but I mean, they just play to emotion. I mean, again, kind of like Texas A&M Florida. I mean, if you're just strictly talking about talent, you've got to like LSU.
Mm-hmm.
Even though their defense was a disaster last year and has been better, I mean, it's still not what you would call a typical dominant LSU defense. I mean, Patrick Peterson and Morris Claiborne and the Honey Badger aren't coming out on the field anytime soon. But I like LSU. I'm not sure if I like them pulling the touchdown or not. But, I mean, you talk about a huge storyline this time next week. If Brian Kelly falls to 1-2 with that one win being over Nichols not being that impressive either.
You're absolutely right.
Do want to point out too, and I'm sure you already know this, but there was an hour plus weather delay in that South Carolina ODU game, which I thought maybe impacted the second half and some of the crowd attendance there. I would be surprised, just because it's LSU and the team's 2-0 after the way they played against Kentucky, if that place isn't
the screech will be just incessant.
Yeah, if Shane Beamer can't wake him up for this one, then they're probably not going to have an imposing atmosphere all season long.
Yeah, that series all time is I know history books don't matter like this on Saturday, but it's 19-2-1, I think, is the series in favor of LSU.
Yep.
Not exactly nail-biting.
No, it's not. Great stuff as always, David. We really appreciate you spending a little time with us. Let everybody know how they can keep up with everything that you're doing.
Yeah, timesfreepress.com for the articles and WGOW from 2 to 5 Central for the radio.
All right. Thanks again. What you got going this weekend? Where are you going?
Well, our two oldest kids are actually Tennessee students now. So
wow.
Time flies. I know. It is family weekend in Knoxville. So Kelly's taking our youngest. He's in ninth grade. They're going up tomorrow afternoon. And then Connor and Emily will meet up with them. And then I'll go up on Saturday and spend the day. It's a 7:45 Eastern. I can't stand these 7:45 kicks that they've got now. But anyway, so it'll be kind of a big Pascal family deal up there this weekend. So trying to make the most out of what is sure to be just a lousy game against Kansas.
Yeah, shouldn't be a whole lot of drama. Yeah.
You make out your letter.
It's the first time a team has come into Neyland Stadium coming off a loss to St. Francis.
If you're unhappy, David, if you're unhappy about the start times, my understanding is you write a letter to Walt Disney about it. That's how you get I believe that's how you get that's where you forward complaints about SEC start times.
Hey, I think we're all learning that the CBS 330 game, that's no longer, of course, it's no longer CBS, but if you're in the marquee matchup, you're in that 7:30 game
right.
at night.
And you might be on
or the noon Eastern.
And yeah. You might be on ABC.
Yep.
More and more of those games I think are going to be on network TV.
Mm-hmm.
That's like Tennessee-Oklahoma next week. I'll be out in Norman next week. That's 7:30 on ABC.
All right, David. We'll talk to you next week. Have a great trip.
All right, you guys do the same. Have a great weekend.
All right. David Pascal joining us as he does every Thursday. He's great. I mean, he's got tidbits about everybody. That's what's doesn't matter. We don't have. I mean, obviously this isn't rehearsed. You can tell listening to us that it's not. But I mean, anything we throw at him, he's got something. I mean,
he's the
great.
Best. He's the best.
All right, we'll get to our next break. Don't forget Tiger Takes coming up in just a few minutes here on the Thursday Drive.
Experience and knowledge from the pros.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill and Dan here in the studio, and our thanks to our good friend David Pascal for joining us from Chattanooga with some really good insight. I mean, there are some really interesting games this weekend. We didn't really get into Auburn, New Mexico. Look, New Mexico will be a challenge for the Auburn defense, as Devin Dampier has really he has run and passed very well. They can do some things offensively. Auburn can't just, I think, take it for granted that they're going to roll over offensively. Now, defensively, I just don't know what New Mexico can do to really slow teams down. They haven't had any success here in the first couple of games. But
how do you play the Auburn offense if you're New Mexico? What do you do? Do you try to emulate with Cal?
I think they probably do the same thing Alabama A&M did. They're gonna come up there and say, we're gonna get after your quarterback and see if you can beat us.
See if your receivers can win one-on-ones.
Because they know Cam Coleman probably isn't going to play. So, I mean, yeah, I would think that that'd be your best shot.
And while people may not read too much into the especially if it's a positive result for Auburn, I think it's if part of the problem was a lack of quick passes, from the
this should be an opportunity to work on them.
Yeah, should be.
Mm-hmm. Tell you what, we'll go ahead and get to our bottom of the hour break. Get back on track. And speaking of track, it's takes. Tiger Takes is coming up on the other side with Eugene Asante. So stick with us here on the Thursday Drive. I'm going to bring you Tiger Takes once again, where Tiger Takes will be moving starting next week to Wednesdays. But it, as always, is going to be brought to you by 12K Salon in downtown Auburn. Visit them today at 217 North College Street or book online at 12ksalon.net. And Jacob Goins sat down with, spent some time with Auburn senior linebacker Eugene Asante once again here for Tiger Takes.
Jacob Goins with you on ESPN 106.7 Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Our weekly sit-down interview for Tiger Takes. It's brought to you by 12K Salon in downtown Auburn. And we're sitting down with Auburn football linebacker Eugene Asante. Eugene, thanks for your time again today, man. We appreciate you hopping on. And we'll just jump right into everything. I know last week the result wasn't what you guys were looking for in the tough loss to Cal at home. Kind of walk us through what this week has been like. Just trying to, overcome what happened a week ago.
Yeah, so, obviously going through that game was a bizarre experience. Going through that, it was a hard thing to endure, just being in a position where you feel like you can, go out there and get a win. And we didn't do that. So being in a position now where we have to reflect and understand what mistakes we made, put on film, just to learn and grow from it, so we don't allow that game to beat us twice. We felt like there's some things that we needed to clean up defensively to polish up our game and to put us in better positions to win football games. And I just encourage the guys throughout this week to be very critical of what they see on film. Be your own worst critic and, prepare yourself, because it's a long season and those mistakes that we made early on in the season, we want to improve upon them and be ready to take on anyone as we prepare to play New Mexico and then go into SEC play.
And I know it's tough to look back on a loss and talk about it and kind of work through it, but I do want to pick your brain just for a second because you mentioned right there how, be your own worst critic and find a way to learn from that and get better because it is a long season. And so in the first half last week, quarterback Mendoza for Cal seemed to have a lot going for him and they were just kind of, rolling out, dunking it down and picking up chunk yardage. But you guys made some really key adjustments in the second half and really slowed down what they had to do. What were those conversations like and ultimately what'd you guys have to do?
Ultimately we had to get back to playing our brand of football, understanding that Mendoza was having a great first couple of drives. I remember even coming off the edge and applying a little bit of pressure. He threw a perfect ball on the sidelines, and those are the type of plays you just tip your cap to the opponent and be like, yeah, he made a spectacular play. But as the game progresses, understanding that we have to be tighter in coverage, understanding that whenever my number is called or whenever other guys' numbers are called to apply pressure, we need to apply pressure and, get to the quarterback. And understanding that they had a good game plan, they came in and wanted to neutralize our pass rush. by getting Mendoza in situations where he would throw the ball very fast, get the ball out very fast to neutralize our pass rush. So we had to just make those adjustments and understand that, tell the DBs and tell the linebackers to make, you know, more vision breaks, breaking of the football, because the ball will be coming out fast. So all of those things that were adjustments that when we went into halftime, and just protecting us to the flats and doing different things to coverage to try to neutralize what they were trying to do.
And in a game where offensively, you know, Auburn struggled as the game went on, got it going there towards the end, how does that impact how you guys take the field and take and approach every single drive where, it, you know, you have confidence in the offense, I'm sure, but how does that affect you guys when you're taking the field where, you know, in a game where the offense did struggle a little bit?
Yeah, it's certainly a game where you have to understand you are your brother's keeper and try to put out the fire. It's a game where, you know, you try to take pride in putting a good defensive performance out there and understanding that, you know, although the situation weren't the best for defensively, it's on us to go out there and put the fire out and, you know, be the defense that we say we can be, you know, regardless of the situation, form or facet. We got to go out there and play our brand of football and try to hold them, to whether it's 3 points or just holding out, not getting a touchdown. So it's certainly something where you have to understand and put your big boy pants on and play, you know, hard knock football. But we have tried to embrace that, and I feel like we embraced that in the second half and picked up from where we started the game.
Auburn football linebacker Eugene Asante joining us here on ESPN 106.7 for Tiger Takes. It's brought to you by 12K Saline in downtown Auburn. And we flip the page now to what's coming up this weekend. Eugene, back at home, back inside Jordan-Hare Stadium. And while it's not a Power 4 opponent, I'm sure you guys have talked a lot about that offense for New Mexico that scored almost 40 points against a top 25 team in Arizona last week. The game plan for you specifically and then the defense as a whole going into the game this week?
Yeah, I think New Mexico has a great quarterback, somebody that is very dynamic with his legs. It's going to be a good test for us to be able to understand and going against an elite competition like him. A great quarterback, great running backs, dynamic running backs that have speed and burst. Receiver number 15, who's a dynamic player, certainly somebody that's made an impact during the season. Quite frankly, it's going to be a good test for us to go up against them. And for us, it's just trying to play our brand of football every week, holding ourselves to a standard that is not wavering, regardless of the opponent or the former facet. We want to go out there and play lights out. And this is the game to go do that and display that, you know, going against elite competition like New Mexico. So, you know, we're certainly excited for the challenge and ready for Saturday to get here.
I feel like it's got to be tough when a team, you know, comes off a loss like this and you're trying to move on, trying to move forward. And it's no secret there's a lot of noise out there, right? There's a lot of things being said and conversations being had outside of your guys' locker room. And so I feel like it's got to be tough to kind of shut some of that out and just focus on what you're trying to do and the goals that you guys are trying to accomplish, huh?
Yeah, it certainly is. Being a football player, I really think you do have to have tough skin. And everything that you do, whether it's from, you know, going from one game, you're having a good game to not having a good performance. It's a thing where you have to have tough skin and understand that, you know, everybody's a critic within this sport. So, just balancing that and also being a college athlete, college student, is a hard thing. And I encourage anybody, in it, just to remain steadfast and keep the main thing the main thing. And when I feel like when you prioritize the main thing, it eliminates distractions and, you know, keeps you on the right track. So it's been hard, you know, not just for myself, but it's been hard to try to be a leader and try to keep the locker room intact, you know, especially with the outside noises and, you know everybody's opinions. We understand that everybody's going to have an opinion, but the only opinion that matters is the opinions of ourselves and our peers. That we go to work with every single day. So we're just going to continue to try to hone in on that and play for one another. And there's plenty of football to be played. So we're excited to go display what we can do.
I like that. Yeah, and it's some of that noise is so loud, right? I mean, and it's just it comes from all over the place and different directions and different outlets and things like that. And so proud of you guys for pushing forward and being able to focus on New Mexico this week. And Eugene, as a team, as a whole, as a program, how can you guys use this week to get ready for SEC play? Because it starts next week, a couple of more home games, and then, of course, the month of October where you guys are on the road the entire time. How can you use this week to get prepared for the start of SEC play next week?
Yeah, it starts with going out there and playing dominant style of football, being physical in everything we do, and going out there and playing the game the right way with a relentless effort. From a defensive perspective, with violent tackling and elite mental execution, and doing it for your brother, you know, the left and right of you. I think it starts with us going out there and, you know, just having our best performance, offensively, defensively, special teams wise, putting it all on tape, just to reassure ourselves we are the team we believe we be, and just continue to build upon that. Every game is building that confidence, and then you get into SEC play, and then, you know, that confidence is rising. So it starts with Saturday. This is people will say, schedule-wise, if they're playing New Mexico, but this is a super big game to me in terms of building the foundation of our team.
And looking from kind of covering the games and watching these first couple of matchups for you guys, I feel that there's a lot of rotation in that linebacker room. And we figured that would be the case because there's so much talent there. But just from what I've seen, lots of rotation for you guys so far.
Yes, sir. Coach Durkin does a good job of trying to get different guys rolling in and out the game. And, we have guys where they provide value in different spots. And he does a good job of utilizing that, that rotation and getting everybody in and allowing guys to be fresh, rolling and being fresh during the game. We've seen guys like Austin Keys has been in the rotation playing Mike linebacker. Dory Mauzi has been in the rotation. Myself, Robert Woodyard has been in the rotation. And Fanaje Gote has been in the rotation. So a lot of guys just rolling in and out, just going to display what we can do and ultimately helping this defense, which is ultimately what we want to go do. Show that we can provide different things to our defense and play better as a unit.
Auburn hosting New Mexico inside of Jordan-Hare Stadium. Game 3 of the season, looking to bounce back after a loss to Cal a week ago. Pre-game, all that gets started over on Wings 94.3, and kickoff is at 6:30 on Wings 94.3. Eugene, I need you to get a turnover and a return touchdown like we had a year ago at A&M. I got to get one or two of those from me this year, my man. That was so exciting to watch last year.
Yes, sir. I've been telling the guys all week. I've been proclaiming it. I'm like, man, this is the game I go get a forced fumble.
So, okay.
I'm glad we said it on the air. I'm going to go get it this Saturday.
It's on the airwaves now, man. Now you got to back it up because now there's proof, right? Now there's proof,
yes,
and
sir.
It's recorded and out over the airwaves. All right, we'll be watching for it. So a fumble recovery. Are you returning it for a touchdown or just hopping on top of it?
I'm going to be the one to cause it.
Okay.
God willing, there's nobody around where I can scoop it up and run it into the end zone. And then, I've been telling myself once I get to the end zone, I'm going to do one of those college football celebrations that I see on the little video game. So I'm probably going to replicate one of those.
Okay. All right. Well, hey, we got it written down now. We'll keep tabs on that, see if it happens this Saturday as you guys take on New Mexico. Eugene Asante, Auburn linebacker, joins us every week on ESPN 106.7. It's for Tiger Takes, and it's brought to you by 12K Salon in downtown Auburn. Book your next appointment for men or women's haircuts at 12ksalon.net.
Again, join us next week on Wednesday for Tiger Takes, but it's brought to you each week, as Jacob said, by 12K Salon in downtown Auburn. We'll get to our final break here of the Thursday Drive. Still time for you to join in, so come on, 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline.
Hi, I'm Jessica Venturi, Lee County District Attorney, reminding...
Final segment here on the Thursday Drive with Bill and Dan. Still got time for you to join us on the Drive Hotline, 334-321-1390, and of course sponsored by Skybar, and let's get to it. And Terry is up next. Hey, Terry.
Hey, Bill. Hey, Dan. How y'all doing today?
Doing all right, Terry. Good to hear from you.
Good to talk to y'all. If you guys have said this, I apologize for asking you to repeat yourself, but have you guys given an opinion or a thought on the Peyton Thorne thing? It seems like everybody does.
Yeah, I think we've spent a lot of time giving our thoughts on it.
Yeah, without knowing, I guess the most concise way I would say it, Terry, is without knowing what's going on in practice, I would think that Thorne probably can't convince people this Saturday that things are all better because Auburn's playing New Mexico, mm-hmm. and it's not gonna quiet too much doubt that people would have about his ability to perform against Arkansas or Oklahoma. I don't think Hank Brown can convince people by himself that he's the best option against Arkansas or Oklahoma by playing well against New Mexico. So I would think you start Thorne because he's your first option and he's still the quarterback. I would get Hank Brown reps in the first half with the starters. I don't know if that's the second drive or the third drive or the fourth drive, but I would want Hank Brown in the game early so that the first time you ever go to Hank Brown, it's not, you know, so the first time isn't against Arkansas or the first time isn't against Oklahoma. I think you go to Hank and get him some reps at the starters this Saturday, even if the plan is to go with Peyton Thorne the rest of the way.
On the other hand, Terry, my feeling has been I do agree with Dan. I want to see Hank Brown when the game means something, when with the first team offense and against the best that the other team has to offer. So I'd go the other way. I'd go Hank first. But if you start Peyton, I'd like to see Hank by the second drive at the latest.
Yeah, well, you're probably going to start a senior on homecoming, let's be honest.
That's
factors
true.
That I think are important. New Mexico State's terrible on defense. They're horrible. So he puts up big numbers, big deal. I mean, okay, you're just kind of going through the motions because they give us something like 550 yards a game or something.
597, I believe, a game.
597. Yeah,
to me, the most significant thing that would happen Saturday would be if Thorne is disastrous against New Mexico and forces your hand that Saturday or moving out of that game, because I think that could impact who your starter is against Arkansas more than if Thorne. I mean, I think people will still be waiting for Thorne to play better again. I mean, playing well against Alabama A&M didn't necessarily carry over to Cal. Playing well against New Mexico may not necessarily carry over to Arkansas or Oklahoma at the same time. And you know, we had Justin Ferguson on in the first hour, Terry, and he mentioned there are things outside of who's playing quarterback that Auburn needs to improve on. You need to see more short stuff involving the receivers. You need to see the running backs touch the ball more. The overall offensive line play needs to improve. So there's other things to watch for, but how Auburn utilizes the quarterbacks has become the main talking point for the offense this week.
I think there's been a factor that Doug pointed on his show that Peyton Thorne wears a different color jersey in practice than you hit. If you know you're not going to get a hit, practice don't mean a lot to me.
Yeah, but I don't think
I don't buy that. That's it. I don't think Peyton Thorne is afraid or scared. I think there's a difference in worrying about being hit as just feeling the pressure when you're out there under the lights in front of the crowd and everything.
Yeah, I would say, first of all, that's how it's handled with every starting quarterback in major college football. And also, I think that I have never gotten the sense that Peyton Thorne doesn't like contact. And if anything, I think Peyton Thorne's
at
more
times,
worried about
he should avoid it more.
Yeah, I think if anything, I'm worried about Peyton Thorne's hesitance to make a mistake. You know, it seems like it's like a hothouse flower symptom almost, where it's like, you know, he needs everything to be perfect to be at his most productive, and he's a good improviser. But I think the bigger problem is that reluctance to make a mistake can lead to him holding the ball too long, and that can that can really limit an offense. I don't think it's a if anything, you know, the thing that's tough to simulate. We asked Jake about this, simulating the need to make quick, decisive, correct decisions in practice. Mm-hmm. You know, whether or not you're doing it with contact, but just doing that, because that's the thing that Peyton Thorne needs to carry over to games.
Because he has played a ton of football, to be honest.
Yep.
He's a fifth-year senior.
Who is the son of another coach. Yeah.
Right. Appreciate it, guys. You have a great day.
All right, Terry, good hearing from you. Just about out of time here on the Thursday edition of The Drive. Again, our thanks to our guests today. Of course, Justin Ferguson, who's usually here with us joining us in hour number one, and then David Pascal in the second hour. And again, a reminder that Tiger Takes next week, the plan is for it to move to Wednesday permanently from that point on. Now, tomorrow, we've got another fun Friday for you. We'll do our best to check in with Barrett Salee, although I think the Dodgers are in L.A. tomorrow. He may have some obligations tomorrow. I'll try to check with him during the day to see what the plan is. But
I might steal Ferguson's ticket to Monday's Braves-Dodgers game. We'll see.
Our pit boss, Coach Don Dunn, will be in with us tomorrow, so we're looking forward to that.
The grill will be lit with our main man. The smoker will
absolutely be
on.
And the show will be lit.
Oh, baby.
By Coach Don Dunn.
Coach Don Dunn's going to come to grill out with us.
All right. We are out of time, though, for the Thursday edition of The Drive. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.